Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 94, 10 Favorite Sandwiches. Hey everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and you know this is the podcast that's all about home cooking. And specifically, you know, helping you get in the kitchen and do more home cooking, having more fun, getting more confidence, trying new things. So for all of you home cooks or those of you who want to be home cooks, this podcast is all about you. So today we've got a really fun show lined up. I have my friend Hiro from the True Bromance Film Podcast on, and we're going to talk about sandwiches. Now you might remember Hiro from, I just looked this up, it's been over a year actually since he's been on the show with me. He's actually done a guest podcast episode last summer, but back in March of 2016, I actually had Hiro on the show and we did an episode called Latin American Favorites, where we kind of went back and forth and talked about our favorite Latin American recipes or favorite Latin American dishes. Well, Hiro's back today and we kind of do that with sandwiches. So if you're into sandwiches, looking for a good bit of sandwich inspiration, I bet we have what you're looking for in this episode. So kind of a lighter, more fun episode today for you with my good friend Hiro. Before we get to that, I do want to mention that all of the show notes for this episode, so if you hear about a sandwich you're interested in, you want to go check it out, I'll try to put a little more information at kitchencounterpodcast.com/94. That's just the number 94. That'll get you to the show notes for this episode, and so you can go check that out. Also, if you want to send me an email, if you have any questions or just want to say hi, you can do that at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Of course, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/kitchencounterpodcast and Twitter at TKC Podcast. A couple small bits of housekeeping before we jump into the conversation with Hiro. I gave a cookbook away in my most recent mini smorgasbord. I gave away Pie School by Kate Lebo, and I just want to say that Hannah Chen won that. And I tried to get that book out right away, but the mailing place I typically use was closed for renovation. So Hannah, the book's on its way to you. You'll probably get it in a couple of days. Sorry for the delay, but I hope you enjoy it. Congratulations on winning. I'll have another smorgasbord episode coming up soon with another chance for a cool cookbook. So keep your ears peeled and head over to wherever you listen to this podcast and subscribe so you definitely get that episode and info on the giveaway when it comes out. Also, last episode, episode 93, I had Matt and Jessica Hardicky of Clover Meadows Beef on, and we talked all about beef, what cuts of beef can be used for what kind of cooking, some grilling tips, all sorts of fun stuff. And they were gracious enough to give my listeners a discount on their beef jerky that they sell on Amazon. So if you're interested in getting some really top quality beef jerky for 50% off, that's half price of what they normally sell it for on Amazon, you can go listen to episode 93 and get the discount code for that. Now that's only good through the end of July, so about another week. So by midnight on the 31st, if you get that order from Amazon and use the promo code that I mentioned in the last episode, episode 93, you'll get half price. It's really great jerky. For a 10 pack, I think it normally sells for like 15 or 16 bucks on Amazon. So you'd be getting that for half price. It's all made from beef that they raise on their farm over in near St. Louis. So I highly recommend checking that out. Well, I think that's enough housekeeping for today. So without further ado, I bring you Hiro and our 10 favorite sandwiches. Hiro, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's always an honor to be on. I'm a huge fan of The Kitchen Counter and always jump at the opportunity to come on.
Excellent, excellent. I'm glad you're here. And actually, before we do anything, you should tell folks who you are because you also have a podcast. And I know you've been on the show before and we've talked about it, but for new listeners, why don't you give us a quick elevator pitch?
Okay, so I am the better half of the True Bromance Film Podcast. We are one of millions out there of film podcasts, but we try to differentiate ourselves by keeping it very casual. We're just a couple of old friends drinking beer on the show, reviewing the weekly wide release film. And we really take it from a casual perspective, a very layman's perspective, I guess, to film criticism. We just like to have a good time and yap on the show and just see, like, kind of throw it out there and let the chips fall where they may.
Okay, cool. And I will put in our show notes for today, I'll put links to your show so people can find it. Awesome. And I think this will be episode 94. So it'll be kitchencounterpodcast.com/94, which means I know you guys have like 5,000 episodes. I'm approaching 100. So I probably need to figure out what I'm going to do for my 100th episode, if I even do anything special, but
you have mimosas or something on the show, just pop some champagne and
maybe I'll
and
do
take a cue from.
Maybe I'll do a live.
Oh, that'll be interesting. We've tinkered with that on our podcast, but I don't have the courage to do it since we do drink beer on the show, and editing is so important for a show when you have that much alcohol involved. So I don't have the courage to do it live.
Yeah, you can't take anything back once that bell is rung.
Exactly.
All right. So today we're talking about sandwiches. We've actually talked about having you back on the show a few times. What are we going to talk about? And we both love sandwiches, so somehow we converged on this topic. And we've talked about doing a few different formats, but we thought you came on the show. I can't remember. I'm such an unprepared host. You came on. We talked about our favorite Latin American dishes.
That's right.
Yeah. And we kind of did I think we did five recipes or five dishes each, and we kind of went back and forth. And that was a lot of fun. I actually got really good feedback on that show. So let's do it the same way with our sandwiches. And I wanted to talk about sandwiches because it is summertime. You mentioned, you know, kids are home from school. Sandwiches right. are easy to make. Kids love sandwiches. You can take sandwiches to the beach. You can take a sandwich on a hike. Sandwiches are relatively easy to make. So it just might be kind of fun to riff on some sandwiches. And we each picked five sandwiches, and we know each other's selection, so we didn't duplicate.
Right. I think that the sandwich is an underrated culinary staple. I think that sandwiches leave a lot of room for tinkering, a lot of room for creativity, because the sandwich is such a versatile thing. You know, I mean, even to define what a sandwich is, kind of, there's a lot of opinions on that.
Yeah, so let's talk about that first, because I've seen this on the interwebs and other places, like what is and what isn't a sandwich. So I'm going to give you like what my criteria is for a sandwich, because these are important world shaping topics we're dealing with here, Jairo. So we really need to get
absolutely
like what a sandwich is out of the way.
The definitive description.
Right. So to me, and ethnic sandwiches can differ, right? So a piece of bread to me might be different than a piece of bread to somebody else. So when I say like a slice of bread, like a gyro sandwich, I would consider a sandwich because that's flat bread. I mean, it's bread.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. But I wouldn't consider a hot dog a sandwich, and I would not consider a hamburger a sandwich. I consider a sandwich ingredients wrapped within or between two slices of bread.
Right.
Now, the reason let me just say why I don't think a hot dog is a sandwich.
Okay.
Because it's an entirely different category of food. So my litmus test is if I invited you over for sandwiches to my house, Jairo, and you showed up and I gave you hot dogs, what would you say?
Yeah, I'd be thrown aback a little bit.
Yeah, you'd be like, I thought we were having sandwiches.
Yeah, what is this? So what are you doing over here, Roger? I thought you hosted a great podcast. Yeah. I thought you knew what a sandwich was.
Exactly. Same thing. If I invited you over for hot dogs and I served you a ham sandwich, you'd be like, I thought we were having hot dogs. So right there, that tells me that they're not the same thing.
Right. Right. They're definitely not interchangeable in the conversation. I guess the conversation is really what drives it, right? Like if you can just throw it in there, like for instance, like you mentioned the flatbreads. That's definitely important. I think that as long as you have a bread or bread type thing surrounding it, it's like, for instance, KFC recently did, I think it was KFC, where they had two chicken breasts as the bread, and then the inside was more chicken, I think. I don't know what was going on. I wouldn't consider that a sandwich because that's an abomination, first and foremost.
Probably it's intriguing. It's intriguing.
Yeah, I'm sure I'd try it, but I don't know if I consider it a sandwich. It's got to have some sort of bread type thing on the outside and a protein in the inside. So there's, you know, and whether it's tofu or something like that, or there's got to be a protein. So typically meat, in my opinion, but I guess peanut butter and jelly would kind of break
that. No, peanut butter is a protein.
Peanut is a protein.
It's okay. Not meat, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Then there you go. Protein in the middle at some point.
Okay, fair enough. So basically two slices of bread, tomato, lettuce, and onions would not be a sandwich under your definition.
Absolutely not. That's That's heresy right there.
That's I didn't have time to go and actually buy any ingredients, and I'm making something out of my CRISPR drawer.
Yeah. Okay. That's desperate times right there.
Well. All right. So let's get into this. So we've got 10 sandwiches. We're going to go back and forth. I'm not going to give these in any particular order, although I might save my favorite for last.
I will do the same.
Okay. And I don't think you might know what my favorite is. I probably know what your favorite is too, but we'll go from there. And because you're the guest of honor, Hyrule, I'm going to let you go first. And I'll also mention if we have recipes, if we found a recipe for any of these, we'll put them in the show notes as well. Some we'll just explain and they don't really need a recipe, but go ahead, Hyrule. You're first.
So on my previous visit here to the kitchen counter, we talked about Latin American foods, and I think I brought up the Cuban sandwich, but I actually brought up a medianoche, which is a different type of bread. It's like a sweet bread on the outside. So, but I'd be remiss if I left out the Cuban sandwich in a sandwich discussion. But I'll start with it since I feel like I've touched on this before. It is an incredible sandwich. So there's a little bit of a debate between Miami and Tampa. Miami is where I'm originally from, and Tampa is where I currently reside, as to what goes into a Cuban sandwich. So the Tampa folks, they add a slice of salami in there, whereas the Miami folks, they use the roast pork, the sweet ham, mayo mustard, Cuban bread, which is important, and I'll touch on that in a second, butter and dill pickles, just the basics. But Tampa folks add the slice of salami. And there's quite a bit of heated debate over this when you come down here to the South Florida region about who owns the Cuban sandwich. But I think the key for the sandwich is the bread. So Cuban bread is really hard to find outside of South Florida, I think. When I lived in Georgia, I had to order it online. So a bakery here in Tampa would make it and ship it out to you. They'd wrap it in some sort of like plastic bag and send it out. And because the big grocery stores will typically try to pass you off French bread as Cuban bread, and it's definitely not the same. It doesn't have that kind of light, flaky exterior that Cuban bread has. And I think that comes from lard. Like lard is used in baking the bread as one of the ingredients. So, Cuban sandwiches, I've probably eat it once a week, and that's pretty bad, but I love that sandwich. It's so delicious. It's buttery. It's warm. It's got great, like bold flavors from the pickle and the roast pork and that sweet pork. It's just absolutely delicious.
Yeah. You know what I hate about Cuban sandwiches is that I can't find them where I live.
Really?
Not really. I mean, I'm sure Portland, I don't live in Portland, so I live south of Portland about an hour. I'm sure there's places in Portland you can get a great Cuban sandwich. But where I live, I have not been able to find anything that really – because I did spend some time in South Florida for work several times, and I got to get the real deal, you know, and I just can't find it here. It's too bad. And, you know,
they're
making
really
it –
easy to make.
They are really easy to make. Yeah. It's still not quite the same thing. One of the things for me for a Cuban sandwich is kind of the atmosphere and actually – like going to Florida to get one, you know, that's like the extra 10% on top that just pushes it over the edge.
The best Cuban sandwiches I've ever had are in these like mom and pop little cafeterias where everybody's kind of pushed up to the counter, drinking their little espresso style coffee and having a big sandwich or drinking there's a soda called Materva. It's I wouldn't even know how to describe it. It's kind of like a cream soda tasting thing. Everybody's got that. Everybody's got their Cuban sandwich, their buttery fingers. And it's a little slice of heaven.
All right. I'm going to go up with my first sandwich, which is – I'm just looking at my list. I know we haven't talked about which order necessarily we're going to do this in, but I'm going to start out really simple. And we're going to go with a bacon, lettuce, tomato. So probably the most classic summer sandwich in my opinion because it's light. It's easy to make. It's obviously a no-brainer. It's bacon, lettuce, and tomato, although occasionally I might throw a slice of cheese on there. Or if you're out west here, Californians south of me like to put avocado.
I do that. That's what I do. I take an avocado and I smash it. Because if you leave it sliced, it tends to slide out.
Oh, yeah.
So you got to smash it down and then make like almost like a little basic guac and just slap it on there. It's delicious.
Okay. I've never done that. I've always put it on sliced. And you're right. It does have a tendency to like shoot out the side. Which can I just say – is a gigantic pet peeve of mine in general when I go to a restaurant and I order a sandwich, when they don't understand that the bread to ingredient, I'm not even sure how to explain it. When you bite into a sandwich at a restaurant and literally everything like shoots out the back of it, yeah, that pisses me off.
Right. There's an art to the construction of it. Like, for instance, we're talking about the avocado. The avocado, the way to get around that is to mash it down and make it into like a thick paste. And then also where you layer it. You know, you want to get that close to the bread because the bread has that friction, that grip that will hold that stuff in. Like if you're talking about a burger, the burger's going to hold. You know what I mean? The burger's so thick and so dense and it's got like those rough edges. It'll hold no matter what's touching. But yeah, like if you put the avocado slice between lettuce and the tomato, it's guaranteed to shoot right out the backside.
And the other thing I like about BLTs is they're versatile. It doesn't really matter what kind of bread you make it on. I mean, it doesn't really matter what kind of bacon you use. So you can just put one of those things together. We have them probably once a week in the summertime just because they're easy, they're light, and they don't heat up the house. So
that's my kids like to do them, like to put them together themselves as well. And it's kind of a fun way to get kids to eat is to let them make it. So the BLT is something that's extremely easy for my 5-year-old to make. So we do them quite a bit as well.
I want to see your 5-year-old frying bacon. So if you could get a YouTube of that. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I do the bacon for her.
Okay. Darn, this is going to get interesting real fast. Okay. What's your number four?
So another, you know, summer staple is the chicken salad sandwich. And I love it because you in the summer or even in the winter, like say you have turkey, you have leftover turkey. You know, the next day, a lot of people make that chicken salad sandwich. I like to add curry to mine. I really love a curry chicken salad sandwich. It adds that extra pop flavor that comes with it. I'm not a big fan of like raisins in there or cranberries. And I know that I found a lot of recipes that have that in there, but I like it very basic. You know, I like that chicken, that leftover chicken, a teaspoon, tablespoon of curry powder, however much you want in there, mayo, mustard, a little bit of celery for crunch to give it a little texture. I know some people put walnuts in there, which is also good, but it really is a blank canvas. So if you do like those things, you can just keep adding stuff because it's just like a mass. Put that on a nice hearty wheat bread or something like that, and you're golden. I love it. It's so easy to make, but it always gets rave reviews here in my house. And just that little touch of curry for me is a little topper.
You know, the first time I ever ran into that, it wasn't even as a sandwich, but I remember I was at work and I went out to, I don't know, the deli counter at the grocery store or whatever for lunch one day, and they had a curry chicken salad. Wasn't in the form of a sandwich, so I tried it. It was fantastic. And I could see I've never had it in a sandwich. I've had like chicken salad sandwiches with cranberries and all that kind of stuff, but never the curry. So I could see how that would be pretty darn tasty. I bet in a wrap or in a flatbread would be great too.
Oh, absolutely. There's a little bodega on my way to work that if I'm late to work, which I tend to be from time to time, I always stop there. I'm like, I'm already late as it is. Let me just poke in there and grab they make the best curry chicken salad sandwich already pre-made and stuff. They make it there, but they pre-wrap them and stuff. And then you just grab one and go. Delicious. And I try to get one as often as I can.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. All right. So my number four. I think I'm going to go with a French dip. So we make this quite often as well because, again, it's a pretty easy sandwich. And we don't typically make it in the summertime too much because it's a little bit, I wouldn't say heavy, but it's a warmer sandwich. So a French dip is basically like a French hoagie roll or French, you know, a French, you could even do like sub, I guess, but like a hoagie roll, roast beef. I like to put provolone cheese on it and then some sort of a dipping sauce, like an au jus, or really you can use anything. You could use beef broth if you don't have au jus. You could use, I get the can of Campbell's beef consomme.
Right.
And do that. And what I like to do is I throw the roast beef, the sliced roast beef in there, and I simmer it in the sauce for about a half an hour. And then you pull that out, you plop it on your bread, you throw your cheese on top and, put the top slice of bread in there, and then you just have this really like gooey, drippy, soggy. It's like the only sandwich I like soggy. You know, you can dip it in that au jus and just, it melts in your mouth. It's so good.
And you have to make sure that you've got a hearty enough bread to hold up to the sauce. And also the way you're doing it with the roast beef, you know, kind of dripping already, it's going to turn that bread really soggy. If you use like regular white bread or something like Wonder Bread or something, you're going to have like fish bait by the time you go to put it in your mouth. So you got to use something that's kind of got some oomph to it to hang on. I like onions in mine too. I'll slice some onions and throw it in there. as well.
And the thing, so I guess that kind of goes against what I said at the beginning. It's not really a sandwich you're going to take anywhere. You kind of got to eat it when you make it. Cause to your point, it's like, if you throw that in some tin foil and take it for lunch at work, it's going to be a disaster when you, it's going to be like a mulchy mess when you open it up. But, they're super easy to make. They're really good. And, yeah, so French dip is my number four. What do you got, Hiro?
So I drive a lot. I travel a lot from time to time. Like I said, it doesn't make sense. I travel a lot, but usually when I push out, I leave early in the morning, and I always do a drive-thru at McDonald's. And the only thing I really crave badly at McDonald's is the bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit sandwich in the morning. It's like McDonald's has perfected this simple little beast. But I do make it at home. I'll, you know, just get a regular biscuit, one of the, like the canned biscuits, throw them in there. Have some bacon and an egg, and I tend to fry my egg because I like the yolk to run a little bit. Bacon and cheese, and that's it. I mean, it's just such a like salty but luxurious and flaky buttery sandwich. I could probably eat three or four of those in one sitting. They're so delicious. I can't get enough of them. They're just perfect to start the day. Just love it.
So you use like Pillsbury buttermilk biscuit,
like Grands or whatever it is.
Yeah. And those little tubes that pop when you open them up.
Yeah. I just don't in the morning. I got a hangover or something like that. I don't have the time to sit there and make biscuits from scratch.
I hear you. We do the same thing, but we do the McMuffin route. So we'll get English muffins and, but do virtually the same thing. And what we do, a totally useless kitchen utensil, but we got a couple, are egg rings.
A little circle thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got the exact same thing. Yeah. I've got that.
Yeah. You've put a little butter. Oil works, but the egg will stick to it. If you just rub a little bit of butter inside the ring, and basically an egg ring is just to make sure your egg doesn't, you know, when you crack an egg and you fry it, it goes everywhere. Well, this keeps it in a nice little circle. And, right. Yeah, we got a couple of those. And here's a hack for you, Hiro. If you don't have egg rings, you can use a raw onion ring, or you can use a sliced bell pepper ring.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
Yeah. If you want that, if you don't mind eating
rings, and I use them for presentation. Like if I cook rice, I will put the ring on the plate, stuff the rice in there, and then slide it out, and it makes a nice, pretty presentation when you're trying to, you know, go full artsy on the plate.
Actually, you know, speaking of biscuits too, I'm pretty sure I've used them as like biscuit cutters, like, cause they're nice round. I mean, they're perfect size. They're big biscuits, but yeah, I've used those as like cookie cutters before too. So
yeah. Yeah. There we go. We're just taking this useless device and turning it into something.
Yeah. What
something
did I,
awesome.
What did I say? Useless device. It's ridiculous.
I don't know. But one more thing is I like to do this with a bagel as well. A bagel that works great. You know, a nice toasted bagel. Also delicious. It's perfect for the, you know what I do this a lot is also is for the golf course. I'll take one out there and I'll just eat it in the morning as I'm going to play golf. It's, sets me up for a nice, brutal 150 scorecard.
You know, talking about breakfast sandwiches, I just thought of this, and it's not something I would have put on my list. But when I was a kid, I remember my mom would make, she would just like toast two pieces of bread, probably just white bread when I was a kid. And then she would make like she would scramble eggs, but they wouldn't be scrambled eggs, and they wouldn't be an omelet. It would be like this mass of beaten eggs that she fried and then just like stuck between two pieces of bread. And she just called it like an egg sandwich. And those were delicious. Like I can eat that all the time.
I think as long as there's tons of butter on there, I think it all ends up perfect. I think that's what kind of what McDonald's does, right? They kind of scramble it, but then they let it cook without touching it. So it ends up like in one solid mass that you could kind of manipulate and work with.
They probably, I've never been in a McDonald's kitchen, so I don't know how those are made, but my guess is that they come preformed like that.
Oh, of course.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just,
I know what you
my
mean,
imagination
though.
As to what would go into
like
making that.
Disc. Yeah. Actually, well, yeah, you could probably scramble them and put them in the egg ring.
There you go.
All right. So is it my turn?
Yes, it is.
All right. So for my number three, I'm going to go with a po' boy. So
which kind of po' boy though?
Well, so po' boy, there's lots of different kinds of po' boys as you're aware, right? So you can even have a beef po' boy, but that's almost more like a French dip in my mind because they're kind of sloppy. But my favorite po' boy, and this is strictly through my experience of going to New Orleans, are crawfish po' boys.
Delicious. Yeah. I have had them in New Orleans as well.
I love crawfish. And that's the only place I ever really get it. Shrimp is probably more common. And it's right. So a po' boy is basically like an Italian sub bread, with, usually some, I associate it with seafood. So something like breaded and fried shrimp or breaded and fried crawfish.
Oysters. Well.
Yeah, that's right. Oysters. You probably even do clam, I suppose, if you wanted to.
I've had that as well. Like yeah. Little clam strips.
Yeah, exactly. Little clam strips. That's something you don't find everywhere. Anyway, you get me on a tangent here. And then usually just simply dress with like lettuce, tomato, and some mayo. There might be some, you know, special sauce from the cafe or whatever, but there's something about the simplicity of it. And that fried, breaded and fried seafood, dang, I just eat those all day long.
It's a great hangover sandwich because of that grease and that bread just soaks up everything that's gone on it from the night before. It's a delicious sandwich. I've been to New Orleans a couple times and I always get one of those, man. They're so delicious. But you find them a lot down here as well in South Florida because of, you know, all of the seafood that we have in our local area. But always a good time. Just great sandwich.
What's interesting, you know, I live on the West Coast, so we have a fair bit of seafood around here too, but we just don't have the same. We don't have po' boys. We don't, I mean, it's just so interesting how we just don't have the same like Southern type of foods. Obviously we're not in the South, but we have a different variety of seafood, but it's like we have shrimp. We should have shrimp po' boys around here, but we don't. Anyway,
my experience in California has been that like Asian cooking has influenced California seafood more than anything else. I guess every time I've gone there, it's, you know, very sushi heavy, very light sort of meals that I always associate with Asian cuisine.
That's totally fair. Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true. Good observation. So po' boy. Is my number three. Probably not the easiest sandwich to make at home because there's some frying involved. But if you can swing it, totally worth it.
Yeah, my next one is not that easy either. I've traveled quite a bit in my life. So the first time I had a doner kebab was in Germany. And in Germany, it's very much classic corner food. So they have a lot of Turkish immigrants in Germany, and obviously that cuisine has come with them. And so for those that don't know what a doner kebab is, in the Arab culture, it's known as a shawarma. It's very similar. In the Greek culture, it's known as a gyro. But in Turkey, it's a doner kebab, and it's basically lamb sliced really thin, sitting on a pita or some sort of flatbread. Lots of onions. I like lots of onions on mine. Tzatziki or tahini sauce. Yogurt, some cabbage, salad. And there's a lot of variations there, but there's nothing better. I mean, you could even get a decent, like gyro or doner kebab in the mall, like in the food court. Mm-hmm. It's just that sliced lamb because they've got that like spigot thing or whatever.
Yeah,
it
looks like an inverted triangle just like hanging with meat. And what do they have? They have like a rotisserie on the side. So when the thing rotates, it's like a drill bit. It looks like a giant drill bit, right? Pointing down and it rotates. And so, what is it? The rotisserie heat element on the side just crisps up and cooks it as it rotates. Cooking.
And it really is just ground lamb formed into a, sort of like a meatloaf style ball or tube. And they just put it on there. That's cooked. And that little heating element just keeps kind of cooking it and roasting it. And then the guy, whoever's serving it for you, will take like a long knife and just slice little pieces off. It's delicious. You know, another interesting story is I was in Qatar a few years ago, and they had an actual lamb, though, legs, head, and all, on one of those rotisserie things spinning. And they would kind of – you'd go get your food, and they just slice it right off, depending on which part of the body
you
wanted.
On like a horizontal spit? Like the
– it was horizontal, right? It wasn't vertical. And it was right, and legs and all that stuff were there. I mean, it was crazy, but it was delicious, absolutely delicious.
So if you wanted to do that at home, like what do you think would be the easiest approximation? Just like getting some lamb and roasting it, or?
Yeah, I think that what you would do is get ground lamb, which is readily available. You form it with your seasonings and stuff like that into like a meatloaf dish and, you know, cook it for a little while to get that hardening. But I don't know how you would get that crispiness. I guess you could broil the outside a little bit or maybe pan fry it just to get that crisp and then slice it off as thin as possible. But I mean, you could probably make this same, get the same flavors if you took like a lamb steak or like a lamb shank and pan fried it and then sliced it thin, it wouldn't have that same kind of consistency, but it would have that same flavor.
And you can get a long way there with the spices that you use. You know, if you use the right spices, it's going to get close. Okay. Very interesting.
And the, like a tzatziki sauce is really simple to make. It's just basically like Greek yogurt, I think.
And cucumber. Cucumber, right,
yeah. Dill, a little lemon juice, salt, pepper. You're good to go. Just let it kind of come together and you've got a great sauce. I like to add red pepper flakes a little bit to mine because I like that heat. But I can't tell you how many doner kebabs I've had in my lifetime. There are tons of them.
All right. Well, that was your number two sandwich. We're burning through this list. So my next two sandwiches could easily be my favorite sandwich. So I'm having a little bit of a moment deciding which one to go with next. But because I don't want to offend the fans of either sandwich. Don't get me wrong. No. So I think for my next sandwich, I'm going to go Reuben.
Delicious.
So, yeah, delicious. Maybe, I mean, these aren't necessarily my all-time five favorite sandwiches, what we're going through today, but I would say Reuben would be in the top three on any list of sandwiches I put together. So if you've never had a Reuben, first of all, what the hell's wrong with you? You need to go out and have one.
That needs to be rectified quickly, listeners.
ASAP, yeah. I mean, most decent restaurant that serves sandwiches is going to serve a Reuben. But basically, a Reuben is rye bread, usually marble rye or oftentimes a dark rye, corned beef, some sort of a Swiss cheese, sauerkraut, and Russian dressing. And
isn't it Thousand Island? Are you sure? I think it's Thousand Island, not Russian.
I've seen Russian. I think I've also seen Thousand Island, but
okay.
I don't know. I'm familiar with the Russian dressing as a traditional, but. But really? Yeah, I probably.
Okay, the only way I've had it is with Thousand Island.
Okay, that could be.
Because that Russian has a little bit more sweetness to it.
More tomato-y, right?
Yeah, that'd be interesting to try. I want to try that. Like,
okay, yeah. But it's such a complex sandwich because it's tangy, it's salty, it's kind of got that, you know, rye. Rye isn't for everybody, but if you like rye bread, it's kind of got that sour. It's almost like a type of a sourdough bread. It's not a sourdough, yes, but it's got
almost
that,
got like a bitter.
It's sort bitter, of exactly.
Switch to it, yeah,
exactly. And then of course you have the sauerkraut, the tangy, you know, fermentation, the flavor of the sauerkraut, and then the creaminess of the Swiss cheese. I mean, it's not the healthiest sandwich on the face of the earth.
But oh God, no!
Lord Almighty, it is so good. It's my brother's actually. He's been on the show too before, but that's his favorite sandwich. And he says if he goes to a restaurant, no matter what else is on the menu, if there's a Reuben on the menu, he's like feels compelled to order it because they're just good sandwiches.
The best Reuben I ever had was in Colorado. So there used to be a conference we would go to, and it was in Denver or Colorado Springs. I'm sorry. And then what we would do was rent skis at the local military base because we get a big discount as military folks. And then we drive up to a place called Winter Park. And it's like a 2-hour drive. And you got to go way up the mountains. But somewhere right there in the middle, this one of these tiny little podunk towns that's right off the road had a mom and pop place called Jenny's. And Jenny's served the best Reuben I ever had. The bread was marbled bread. It was rye and pumpernickel kind of mixed in. So it looked like a hurricane swirl. And that meat was just so perfect. The sauerkraut, I believe, was homemade and just gooey and hot. The outside bread was crunchy, just perfect, just delicious, delicious sandwich.
Yeah, it's – and they're not – I mean, there's a lot of ingredients. There's a lot going on. They're not impossible to make at home. I mean, you can buy all of the ingredients, right, pre-made and put it together. A lot of the ingredients you might not use for a lot of other things, so maybe make a Reuben when you're going to serve a group of people or whatever. But, yeah.
That's true.
It's pretty dang good, pretty tough.
I've never tried to make my own pastrami or my own like corned beef. I would think that would be a tall order.
So I think it could be. I've never tried it either. I'd like to try it, but you know, limited time and space. There's actually a place in Portland called Otto's Sausage Kitchen. And they've actually been on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives before. They're just a great meat shop. They have like, I don't know, 120 varieties of sausage. I mean, that's kind of their claim to fame, chicken, beef, pork, you name it. But they'll make pastrami for you. So if you bring them all the ingredients that you want in it, it's almost like if you're a hunter and you like bag a deer, you know, you can take it to the butcher shop and they'll turn it into jerky and hamburger and all
right.
This. They'll do the same thing with like
pastrami.
Yeah, it's awesome. Right. It's awesome. So I might try that. That'd be like a nice halfway. You can bring all the spices, bring whatever you want in it. And then, you know, you come back. I don't know how long it takes, weeks later, and pick it up.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Yeah.
But I guess that moves me to mine. So this is, I'm very passionate about this sandwich, and it's the grilled cheese sandwich. It's extremely basic, but I think that when to do it right, it requires a degree of patience and artistry in my mind. A lot of times you'll see, like my mom used to take the grilled cheese and like mash it down with the spatula, and it would drive me crazy because now you've got like this kind of rigid sort of sandwich. Yes, it's crunchy. Yes, it's buttery. But in my mind, the selection of the ingredients that you're going to use, right? So you have to get the right bread. It has to be thick to a degree. I like brioche. I like it to be a little sweet, and it toasts really well. Sourdough works great. Or even if you're in the grocery store, they'll sell like the thick sliced kind of country style bread that really works well there. And for my personal cheeses, I like Gouda cheese because it melts really well and it becomes very, very creamy as it heats up. But let's be honest, American slices work just as well because it melts down perfectly. Mm-hmm. I've always found that cheddar or those cheese like that, they tend to be oily once they're heated up.
Yeah, they're not melters for sure. Yeah.
They're not melters,
they're clumpers,
right?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so it's kind of hard to use those, but I think Gouda melts perfectly fine. It has that great nutty taste to it. So I'm a huge fan of the movie Chef. So I sent you this message earlier, like, hey, check it out. In the film, he makes a grilled cheese sandwich for his son, and towards the back end, during the credits, you see kind of an outtake from the film where the actor, John Favreau, is being taught by a professional chef how to make the perfect grilled cheese sandwich. And it's all about heat control, really, right? So it's lots of butter, lots of heat control. I think that our society, we're a little impatient, and we tend to heat the burner up too high.
Yeah.
Rather than preheat it early and keep it at a nice low heat, like a low hum. That's where I like to like live right there. And just slowly make sure that bread gets nice and crunchy on the outside, but never mash it down. Just keep that airy taste, that airy texture to it, and promise you that your grilled cheese will go up to the next level. Just make sure you use tons of butter. That's always important. I've also seen a trick that a lot of people don't do is to actually cook the inside first. You know, you cook the inside of the grilled cheese sandwich.
If I have time, that's the way I like to do it. So both sides of your bread are crispy.
Right. Yeah. So you take a little bit of butter, just put it down. Then you take it off the pan, the same thing. Then you put your cheese in there, and then you do the outsides, mm-hmm. and the cheese melts. Another great thing. But it's important to get that nice crunch on the outside and that nice melted filling. And, of course, you can add whatever you want to it, bacon, lettuce, whatever. But for me, cheese, bread, and butter is the way to go.
You know what I've tried before, too, which works pretty well, not as a single cheese ingredient, but it can add a really cool element because you can mix stuff into it. But cream cheese is one of your cheese components because it's already practically melty anyway. And if you want to do something like cheddar, like if you finally grated some cheddar and mixed it in with some cream cheese, I think it'll work out better because you won't have this clumpy, oily bits of cheddar that didn't melt. It'll be more incorporated into like the ooey gooey cream cheese. That works pretty good too. But like cream cheese and sun-dried tomatoes mixed into it on a grilled cheese sandwich, it's pretty damn good.
That's kind of like a nice deconstructed version of the tomato soup that kind of comes on the side. You get a lot.
Yes, you know, that's a good point.
It's an interesting take on that. It's an interesting sort of like deconstruction and then like, what do you call it, integration of the tomato. Huh. That's interesting.
I hadn't thought about that, but you're right.
You know, of all the stuff, I love to cook, and I cook a lot here at home. I do the lion's share of the cooking. My wife is not the best, but hopefully she doesn't listen, but but of all the things I make, this is what kind of excites her the most.
Huh.
Because I feel like I've mastered my grilled cheese sandwich, and it's not hard to do, but it takes a little bit of patience and a little bit of finesse with, you know, heat control and things like that. I think it's really important that you just let that pan get nice and warm up front for a good 10-15 minutes. Don't even mess with it, and then start cooking.
Yeah, and a heavier pan would be better.
Of course.
Now, how do you feel about mayonnaise instead of butter? Because a lot of people use mayonnaise, and it does provide a pretty crispy bread. But I'm a butter guy.
How does it taste? I've never Does it add a different flavor to it?
Not greatly, I wouldn't say.
I've seen people taking mayonnaise and putting it on a steak and then cooking it on the grill or in the pan.
On a steak saying, first? Interesting.
Yeah, like a New York strip or ribeye. Just put a thin coat of mayonnaise right on the top of it and then pan fry it or whatever. I've never tried it. It looks like blasphemy to me. But, well, yeah.
Steak good, mayonnaise good. I mean, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, what could go wrong? You're basically just adding more fat, so right. Which fat obviously tastes good.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't sound – it sounds weird, but yeah, I might try that. That sounds like
– Give it a shot. See what happens.
All right, so grilled cheese. And you know what? At some point, we should probably have a conversation about Chef, even though it's not a new movie. I know you love it. I think it's a great movie. It's one of my favorite summertime movies, actually.
Absolutely. I just watched it today. I you know, partied a little bit last night, so I was laying in bed. I was like, what should I watch? I'm going to talk about sandwiches with Rogers today. Let's watch Chef. I watched it again today. I love it.
It's a good summertime flick. All right, so we're at one sandwich left, so my last sandwich. Not a common sandwich these days. In fact, I bet a lot of people probably haven't even had it before, but one of my favorites, that's a Monte Cristo sandwich. Have you ever had
one? I have never had one.
You've never had one. Okay. So these are a little bit of a pain to make, but a traditional, in my opinion, a traditional Monte Cristo sandwich, it's a, some sort of a white or sweeter bread, maybe brioche or a challah bread even could work, or just a nice thick sliced white bread. It's got thin sliced ham, thin sliced turkey, some sort of a Swiss cheese. I like to put just a tiny, tiny hint of like Dijon mustard in mine. But what makes a Monte Cristo sandwich so different is that it's battered and fried. And it's served with some sort of a fruit preserve, like a berry jelly or berry jam. And it is hard to find, kind of difficult to make because most people aren't deep frying sandwiches at home. But if you can find one, you definitely have to try it. When I was a kid, I lived near a town in Oregon called Newport, which is on the coast. And there was this restaurant there called the Galley Ho, you know, like an old diner type seafood restaurant. And they had Monte Cristo sandwiches on the menu and they would come out cut in like triangular, right? So you'd have like the two halves of the sandwich and they were just like crispy batter fried. You'd get in there, you'd have this, the meaty interior. You'd have the sweet of the preserves. I can't even describe it. You just have to try it. It's so good. Now,
you're right. It's hard to find. I'm sure I've seen it on the menu at some point in my life because I go to a lot of restaurants and I'm a foodie, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head, hey, let's go to place X for a Monte Cristo.
Yeah. I don't think they're that common. And I should mention a lot of places will put like powdered sugar on it. So a lot of people approximate it with like a French toast sandwich. Which if you're doing it at home, you could do that. You could basically make French toast with all the ingredients in the middle and just kind of pan fry it. That works too. Or I've even seen folks grill it or even put it on like a panini press or something. But the traditional is deep fried. And even if you do find it in a restaurant, you won't often find it deep fried anymore. But if you can, you got to try it because, again, not the healthiest sandwich in the world, but unlike most sandwiches you'll find, and they're one of my favorites for that reason.
There's a place here that does like a cheeseburger wrapped in like pizza dough and then deep fried, really? Which is excellent. It's excellent. So it's close. I mean, but it's sort of a riff on it, but it's really good. It sounds like the Monte Cristo is kind of close to like a beef Wellington sort of style thing where you're wrapping it in. But
it's not a dough. It's just like a batter.
Is there bread also outside from the batter?
Yeah. So basically you're making a sandwich and you're just dipping it in batter and deep frying it.
Oh, good almighty. Yeah. That sounds like something you would find at the fair or something. You know, like
it
now you get like.
It does. You're right.
Deep fried butter, deep fried Oreos, all that kind of stuff.
Deep fried ham sandwich. Can you get, Okay. So those were our 10, but I think we had a couple of honorable mentions we wanted to just throw in real quick. Is that true?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I have a ton of them and I made my list not so much off of my favorites, but they're my favorites, but also relatively easy to make at home because I know that you're promoting, people to get into the kitchen and kind of do it yourself and enjoy cooking. So I went with sandwiches that are a little easier to make. Now, a banh mi is a delicious sandwich, but a huge pain to make. because you've got to pickle the some of the ingredients. You've got to make this like pork patty thing. It's not a very easy sandwich to make. Neither is a Philly cheesesteak. I don't think is that easy to make it right, because I mean, yes, you could go get steak'em out of the freezer and do that. But to do it right, you've got to get some really thinly sliced steak and then do it all up, get the onions, get the right cheese. I don't think it's as easy as advertised. But yeah, those two, I absolutely love. The banh mi, I'm relatively new to. Mm-hmm. I think in the last like 5 years, it's like kind of jumped in popularity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I think so.
But it's a absolutely delicious sandwich that more people should go out there and check out. We have like a little farmer's market that comes down here the first Friday of every month. And there's a little Thai, Vietnamese, I don't know what it is, sort of hut. And they have these great banh mi's in there. So I get one once a month.
Okay. Okay. I got a couple. Is that all? Go ahead and do all of them real quick.
Oh, yeah. That was it for me. I mean, I had cheeseburger, but you already told me that.
We can't do cheese. No, that's not a sandwich. That's a burger.
I had a lobster roll.
Those are good. Yeah.
Which are delicious. Also, I don't know if it's a summer thing. I mean, we have them here during our market, but it's always summer here, so I don't know what qualifies. And
what about cheeseburger? Not a sandwich, but patty melt is a sandwich. That's practically a cheeseburger, but it's just got
bread.
You're
changing the bread, right? I mean, it's just the toast.
Yeah. But I guess there's a little technique, like a cheeseburger. Well, let me think about this. It depends on how you make your cheeseburger. Like if you cook your cheeseburger and you get the cheese melty and runny and gooey, that's like a patty melt.
Like that's how I do mine.
Yeah, you can't just make a patty melt and throw like a slice of cheese on top after you take it off the griddle, right? That's not a patty melt. That's just
when I make a burger, I will get my burger almost to doneness and then slap the cheese on it and let it get gooey. I like it to be very melted on there. So yeah.
Well, and then a patty melt usually has like sauteed or caramelized onions on it. And so, I mean, when you say patty melt,
as do some burgers,
but I think when you say patty melt, it's a very specific set of ingredients. Like if you say cheeseburger, it could be, you know, whatever kind of cheese. It could have bacon on it. It could have lettuce, you know, patty melt is like bread, patty, cheese, onion, and that's it. So,
right. And you get it at a diner somewhere. You won't get it like at a McDonald's. You're going to get it at a diner.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be made like on a flat top griddle which I personally, I don't want to get in a burger debate, but personally, I think all burgers should be made that way. I like grilled burgers, but I don't think it's the superior way to make hamburgers. Let's just.
You prefer them on the grill or on the griddle?
Griddle.
If I had more space, I would prefer them on the griddle. I live in an apartment, so it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
But I'll pan fry mine. I'm a big fan of, you know, the Food Network, and I saw Bobby Flay use almost like a good helping of cooking oil to put that burger in there. And it was, I've tried it like that and it comes out really, really good.
Yeah.
I think the key to the burger though is the way you manage the ground beef, like not to overwork
it. And here's a tip for ground beef too that I saw somebody do, I don't know, on a TV show or something one time. And I thought it was a great idea. And I think it works both on the grill and on the griddle. But you know, when you form your patties, here we go on a burger conversation. Anyway.
Okay.
So when you form your patties, you know, they're smooth typically, right? And maybe they might be rough because they're handmade, but typically the top and the bottom is smooth. If you take a fork and you just kind of work the top and bottom of the patty to give it some valleys and bits and chunks, kind of rough, those rough bits get crispy and crunchy, and it gives it more of a texture and instead of just like a flat surface of the burger, you have all these nooks and crannies that get done and you get a little more flavor. And it works. You should try it. It's interesting. I never remember to do it, but when I do, it usually results in a tastier.
I got to try it out.
Yeah.
Because it's amazing what difference the way you handle the meat makes when you're in flavor. Because if you take it right out of the package, and granted, if you go to your grocery store and you can see which one is done there because it looks like a brain. It's still in those little long little lines. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You just take it out and gently form a patty and you leave it exactly like that. That has a completely different flavor than if you took it and dumped it in a bowl and then worked it with your hands and added the salt and pepper or whatever you want.
And it's a textural thing too. So like when you fry it or when you grill a burger that you've overworked, a lot of times what'll happen is like if you cut it in half, you'll notice it's like it separates in the middle. If you've ever noticed that, and it's almost like because like meatballs should be worked. And
yes,
that's a meatball texture, right? When you really mash it and grind it and combine it with other stuff and you get this really dense. A burger should not be dense. You're right. It should be minimal. It should be kind of still fluffy. Anyway.
Alton Brown had an episode, you know, that talked about the science behind it, the breaking up of the tissue or whatever it is. And I defer to that guy as to the reason why.
Yeah.
But if you can probably find it on YouTube or Food Network or something like that, he has a really good episode on making a burger.
Yeah. And then I just had another two super quick, I promise no tangent, honorable mentions.
I can't promise that.
Okay, fair enough. One, I would say club sandwich. To me, club sandwich.
Absolutely.
Right. I mean, it's like a double decker basically with, turkey, ham, or is it beef? No, I'm getting my.
You can have turkey, bacon. I think there's bacon is a must. Lettuce is a must.
Yeah.
Tomatoes a must. And a deli meat of some sort, whether it's turkey, roast beef. I've seen ham.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, if I'm ever going out like on a business lunch or something like that, it's like you cannot go wrong with a club sandwich. That's like the fallback. It's like, I'll just get a club sandwich. And they usually come cut in quarters, right? With like the two eggs holding them together.
Toothpick in it.
Yep. Yeah. And then my last honorable mention, which I actually had this on my original list and you made a comment, which I think was rightly so, which is like, it's a really hard sandwich to make. Probably for the main reason that the bread is probably impossible to find most places. And that's a muffuletta. Which typically you would find in New Orleans, right? And that's, it's like muffuletta is the bread and it's also the name of the sandwich. And if you've never had one, I don't know. I guess I've heard muffuletta described as like focaccia bread in a way.
It's kind of it's like a big UFO looking thing. It's like a big circular round bread that you can.
Yeah. It's like a hamburger bun that's like 10 inches wide.
Right.
Only it's more dense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not fluffy like a hamburger bun, but it's sliced horizontally. So you have like a top bun and a bottom bun. I'm probably totally committing blasphemy here to the muffuletta.
Or your New Orleans listeners
They're
are
like,
just throwing,
geez, he just
shutting
compared
the podcast
muffuletta
off.
To a hamburger. Oh my God. Anyway, and it's got, like it's an Italian sandwich, right? So it's got some sort of like an olive, like a tapenade or like a, actually it's not even a tapenade. It's like olive and other vegetables.
An olive salad, really.
It's an olive salad and, salamis. Cured hams. What else?
I don't think there's cheese involved in it. I don't think there's cheese, is there?
Let me think about this. I think there is. I'm trying to think of the last time I had one. It's been so dang long. And I remember we went to, I think it's Central Grocery, where it actually originated in New Orleans. Now I've got a Wikipedia here. Hold on a second. I got to find it.
So what I've got is olive salad, mortadella, salami, mozzarella, ham, and provolone.
Provolone is what I remember. Okay. Yeah. But it's a cold salad. It's just, again, it's probably because it comes from New Orleans and it's got kind of that association for me, but they're really delicious.
That olive salad always adds that big salty flavor to it.
Yeah.
And then the meats that go into it, obviously, you know, you've got salami and the mortadella and stuff. Those are very salty meats. So it's a prepare yourself for like a very salt rush if done incorrectly.
Have your favorite cold beverage nearby.
As I always do.
All right. I think that covers it. I think that hits all of our sandwich check boxes. You got anything else, Hiro?
No, man. Appreciate you inviting me on again, man. Anytime you want somebody to come on, you know where to find me.
Well, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Hiro. He's a fun guy, and I just really have a lot of fun when he's on the podcast. And it's just a fun opportunity for me just to kind of chat and riff about a topic, a food topic, without getting too heavy and deep into it. So, Hiro, thanks again for being on the show. Again, kitchencounterpodcast.com/94. I'll put all of our sandwiches over there, and if I can find a good recipe for them, we'll include that too. Well, folks, that does it for this week's episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I hope you enjoyed. Again, if you'd like to get a hold of me, why don't you send me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Got some good episodes in the pipeline coming up. I won't give everything away, but I'll be talking about freezer meals with a couple of experts on that topic. I've got a ton of book review, kind of interview, cookbook author chats coming up as well. and another smorgasbord I mentioned too coming down the line real soon with another cookbook giveaway. All right, folks, once again, thank you so much for downloading and listening to today's episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. I'm Roger, your host. Until next time, happy cooking.